So welcome to today's podcast, and I'm joined by the very famous Gregory Elfrink from Empire Flippers. So thank you for coming on. Great to have you on here, and hopefully have a bit of fun and pass a bit of knowledge about what you guys do, and other than getting married and all the other crazy stuff that you do on your Facebook. So if you ever follow Gregory on Facebook, just beware. Just you never know what you're going to get with him on there. So
it's a dark, dark place.
Yeah, but he does. He works for Empire Flippers. For anyone who hasn't heard of Empire Flippers, it's a marketplace where you can buy and sell digital assets. I'm not going to sit there and say it's an Amazon affiliate marketplace, because it's anything but. You can buy SaaS tools and AdSense websites, e-commerce websites, and a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, some of the big websites are on there. So how long have you been at Empire Flippers, out of curiosity?
So I came on board April 2016, so almost 4 years coming up here. So I'll be at our next meetup in Hungary. I'll be celebrating my four-year mark. I'm basically like Grandpa Empire at this point.
What the hell? And you're also the face of it. You're the guy that talks at all the conferences and everything else. You're given that shit job of trying to make Empire Flippers seem as if they're a funny, charismatic outfit.
I don't know if I would go so far as I'm the face of it. One thing I'm actually trying to do is make some of our other employees also become more of the quote unquote face, right? Like I got our director of sales a speaking spot at a conference here next month, and that would be in front of a pretty large audience. So hopefully he'll start using his LinkedIn so he can become a face as well.
But for the guys out there who are listening, if you're looking to get into affiliate marketing and you're looking to invest in digital assets, Empire Flippers is one of the places to go, very well known. But I just want to talk about the process. So obviously Empire Flippers is a marketplace, and any old Tom, Dick or Harry could essentially shove a website up and tell you guys it's worth 50 grand and that's what they want for it. Obviously it's not that easy to bypass you guys, you're not fools. But what is the process like for the websites that are coming onto Empire Flippers? I'm assuming it's going to be like a month process to, you know, by the time you do some checks, analytics checks, money proof, you know, checks and all that kind of stuff. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, so we have a few checks in there to kind of weed out the tire kickers to make sure we have quality sites on there. One thing we do is we charge a listing fee. So it's very small. It's like $297 if it's your first time you ever come to our marketplace. Unless you're on one of our like exit planning calls, then we just usually give that to you for free. We do exit planning usually for bigger businesses. But as far as you know, how long that actually takes, It depends on how complicated your business is, right? If it's a small, like $50,000, $60,000 Amazon affiliate site, obviously that's going to be pretty quick and easy. That's like our bread and butter. Now, if it's an e-commerce store that has this FBA component and it's in like five different countries, that's going to take a little bit longer. our time has sort of increased in terms of vetting, not because of the difficulty of vetting the businesses, just because we get a lot of businesses, as you might imagine. So we have an entire team just dedicated to vetting those businesses. And even so, we decline, I think it's around 88% of those businesses, because we do try to keep the marketplace very quality. And we're pretty happy with where that is. I think in over the last year and a half, especially, the quality has gone way up. So I'm very excited about that.
No, it's interesting to hear that you decline 88%. So it's not that easy to get on Empire Flippers. What sort of things would you decline a person on? Like, I'm assuming that it's obviously if they bullshit about the money that the website then you're going to instantly say no. But is there ever instances where a website makes decent money and you're still saying no? Or is there a website that's too small to go onto your particular platform?
Yeah, so on the small side, like we have a pretty small threshold you have to meet. If you're doing like a content site, like traditional AdSense affiliate, that kind of thing, you only have to have like a 12-month average of $500 a month or more in net profit. So like that's fairly easy to hit for most experienced SEOs. It's not really a barrier to entry for them. But where some of those red flags come up for us is, for example, if the seller did try to bullshit us, you know, they think like, oh, I'm going to pull a fast one on EF. They're going to sell it for this big multiple. And, you know, I'm not going to tell them I have PBNs, for example. Now, just as a caveat, we sell tons of sites with PBNs. There's absolutely no problem with that. But the issue comes up with if the seller has a PBN, they know they have PBN links and they don't tell us. We're going to find out because we're pretty good at that. Like we sell content sites all the time. We have our own proprietary way to find out if you lied to us on that. And if we find that out, then you're just blacklisted, right? Like you can't ever sell with us again, because if you lied to us about that, what else are you lying? And one of our biggest things is trust, right? Seller needs to be able to trust us that we're going to get the job done. But also, and this is something a lot of sellers don't think about, is that buyer has to have a ton of trust in us, right? They're going to buy a $300,000 website from us or whatever that it might be. You know, that's a lot of trust there. It's not like we're giving them money. They're giving us money. So yeah. They need even more trust. And we don't want to put those kind of people in front of those buyers. Some of the other things are red flags, like highly seasonal. We don't like big seasonality. If the trend is, and this is a weird one because most people would think that this would actually improve your valuation, but if you have a profit chart that's just hockey sticking like this, like that's great for you as the entrepreneur. That freaks investors out because that investor is looking at that chart and they're like, what happens when this stabilizes? And what does that mean if it stabilizes? Is this a fad? Like what is going to happen there? So they actually prefer slow and steady growth for most investments. Doesn't mean you can't sell that. Obviously you can, it's just more difficult. So those are some things we're looking for. We're also making sure that there's nothing weird going on. And most of the weird things that happen. So for example, like let's say again, you had that Amazon affiliate site that's making, I don't know, $5,000 a month. And you didn't realize that you had a tracking link from another site that is making that site look like it's earning $1,000 more. We would find that out. Now, when that does happen, usually it's not a nefarious thing. In fact, most things we flag as a rejection in vetting has nothing to do with like the seller trying to screw someone over or anything like that. It's usually a genuine mistake, and we help them see that. Another example would be in the FBA space with e-commerce. A lot of these guys are solopreneurs. They're not exactly the best bookkeeper. So we go ahead and build their P&L. And when they see their actual numbers, it's often the first time they realize how much money they're actually making. They're like, Oh, I'm not making nearly as much as I thought I was. Like maybe I'll come back to you in a couple months, you know, when I fix some of the stuff. So a lot of times it's nothing nefarious. It's just like, hey, we need to get this before we can put you up or something like that.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, from an investor's point of view, it's good to know that you go to that level of detail. Because no one really knows from the outside looking in, if you're inexperienced, the level of detail that you guys go into in terms of vetting those websites. You know, I think a lot of people think it's, you know, you can just chuck any old website up there and don't hit you guys, and you guys don't really know SEO that well. And, you know, they're maybe not aware that you guys are participating and have loads of friends in the industry and, you know, participate at all the conferences and stuff. So it's good to hear that, and obviously for investors, know that it's a trusted platform that actually has some form of structure.
So that you bring up a really good point. We get hit, and you'll see this if you like Google us. I'm sure if they go to like second or third page of Google, there will be people like, oh, they don't know SEO, they like didn't check all these backlinks and all this stuff. What often buyers and sellers tend to forget with us, our vetting process isn't due diligence. There's a very clear difference there. So our vetting process is just to make sure the business is legitimate. It is legitimately making the money it says it is. It is legitimately getting the traffic they say they are. And from our own opinion, we think this could be a good purchase. Now, we do this across all types of monetizations. I think it's about 15 different business models that are very different from each other. You know, one doesn't even have a website, technically. It's Amazon FBA, right? Like they don't own a website. So obviously we can't be the experts in every monetization. So we always tell people, you need to do that due diligence. That onus is on the buyer if they want to look at that expert stuff. There's this guy, I forget when it was. I think it was like last year or something like that. He came up to me at a conference. He was like, why are you guys selling the site that's declining? You know, this is a total shit site. Why would you sell this? And like for him, it probably is, you know, like maybe he was a newbie buyer who wants something that's perfect, that has no problems. But to other customers of ours, their due diligence is they want to buy the site that has a penalty or has some kind of problem because they know how to fix it. So they basically get that business on discount. So everyone has different due diligence. And I always recommend just realize when you're looking at our marketplace, there's a difference between vetting and due diligence.
Yeah. And I mean, I think for me, when I'm buying websites, I'm looking for something that maybe isn't anywhere close to 100%, you know, only 50%. I can see lots of content, maybe, you know, the guy's garbage at backlinks or something like that, where I feel I'm quite strong and, you know, get, as you see,
gotta disavow all those Empire Flippers backlinks. That's spammy neighborhood.
Yeah. But, so, you know, as I was saying to you off air, you know, I've had guys come up to me. I spoke at a local conference in Glasgow, and I also done it in India as well. And the figure I spent on a website as a case study was 10 grand. Now, 10 grand to an Indian is probably a year's salary. So I get that that's a lot of money. But I've also had other people come up saying, Craig, there's no way on earth you would ever spend 10 grand on a crappy Amazon website. That's just a lie. And I'm like, man, this is rookie numbers. I'm you know, entering the buying and selling industry at that level. You know, there's websites out there that are selling for, you know, look at Empire Flippers. I looked there last week, and I think there was something. I think the cheapest one was about $30,000, and obviously it scaled the way up. I think there was something on there for like $2.3 million. Yeah, and I think a lot of the guys out there who are maybe working in agencies or, you know, freelancers don't realize that there is a big world out there of buying and selling websites. So I just want to talk about the higher end. So obviously I've started out at the lower end, as everyone does, and I want to buy, sell, and build myself up to eventually there's a point where I come to you guys and say, guys, I've got a website here that earns 100K a month. You know, go and get me some money so I can retire. that's a long-term goal, but you know, what is the most expensive? I you don't have to answer this exactly, because I know you might be tied up with some NDA or whatever, but you know, what sort of is the highest end? Is there websites that go for 10, 20 million or whatever? What's the highest website you've seen?
So on our actual marketplace, the highest one I've seen that we've sold, and this is the highest business, I believe it was an e-commerce business, was about 4 million. The biggest, like straight up just affiliate site, was 1.7 million. And that like probably looked worse than your $10,000 site, to be honest. It had a pretty bad design going on for it. But in terms of like in the general space, so I like gave a talk last year at Chiang Mai SEO, like a little 15-minute talk about this concept that a lot of SEOs don't think about, is just how big can you go with these kind of sites. And like everyone talks about the Wirecutter, right? They sold, I think, for like $20 million to New York Times, something like that. And they're not that different than your run-of-the-mill Amazon affiliate review site. They're really not that different. All they did was invest in higher quality content that made them stood out. They had a YouTube channel. Most SEO affiliates are totally afraid of doing anything video related, as you probably know, even though they could just hire someone to go do it for them. But whatever, different point, right? Yeah. But there's this other site. So this is a tip for anyone out there that if you want to see the big game that is being played behind the scenes, is if you read any kind of content site. So for example, I'm really into outer space. I read this website called space.com. What a fitting name. whenever I find myself reading a content site that I like, that I'm coming back to over and over again, I usually scroll down to the footer. And in the footer, they'll usually say what the company is that owns that site. So I went to space.com's footer, and they were owned by this company that had this portfolio of content sites. I think Tom's Hardware is one of their sites, something like that. You know, some pretty big content sites. They created their own ad publishing display network, similar to AdSense, right? Then one day, like a few months later, I went back down to that footer, and I noticed the name had changed. Like, huh, that's weird. What happened here? So I click on that guy, and it turns out that that company, I'm forgetting the name, had sold all of their B2C content sites to this other company now. I think they might have even sold their like proprietary ad platform that they had created for like $132 million, way outstripped Wirecutter. And some of those sites in this portfolio only had like a domain rating of 16. They look like anything that anyone at Chiang Mai SEO, probably most people in your audience listening to this, could easily create. It's just that most people in the SEO game, they don't think big. This is not an insult by any means, because you're doing a lot with SEO, right? You're like, you know, very focused on it, but by being so focused on it, you forget about the bigger business principles of what you can do when you build these sites. So that's the answer. About 120 million or 132 million is the biggest I've seen. And that was about a portfolio, I think, of 20 sites.
And I'd also be curious to know what sort of guys are waiting in the background, like your investors or customers that are buying websites. Is there more of a trend that there's just these big rich guys just waiting to invest in digital assets now, rather than, because everyone always associates like real estate, you know, rich guys just buy real estate. And what I feel now is there's a lot more potential in obviously buying a digital asset and then flipping it, you know, building it out, flipping it on. You can do that, you know, a lot more. And I'd be curious to know if you guys have seen like more of a trend in that as well, like just big rich non-SEO guys, big just rich investors coming to you. Is there more and more of that happening in the background there?
Yeah. So to answer kind of the first part of your question, for the really moneyed up buyers, ironically, a lot of them were our sellers. So they sold a bunch of businesses from us. They ended up getting, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. For instance, one person sold about $700,000 worth of Amazon affiliate sites with us over a period of a couple of years, used that to buy a SaaS, start a productized service, a hosting company, all sorts of stuff, right? So a lot of times what happens is these sellers get that money, then they reinvest it by buying smaller sites from us, and then they improve them. And the second part of that question, you know, the second half of our name, Empire Flippers, comes from one of our buyer personas that we call Flipper Fred. And that's their main thing, just like real estate flipping, right? They buy a damaged or wounded business, and then they go and heal it up and then grow it. And now they can sell it for significantly more. One of my friends, Felipe, we actually have a success story of him. He bought an e-commerce business from us and basically sold it for almost double the price in about 2 years' time. I think it might have been more than double the price. And likewise, we have several customers that have done this. In terms of moneyed up people coming into our space, we are seeing that more often. What ends up usually happening is they need to find an operator, because say they're like private equity or something like that, that has that kind of money. Well, private equity doesn't actually buy businesses that they run themselves. They usually buy businesses that have transferable management, which is almost none of the businesses on our marketplace, right? Very few of our businesses have any kind of team whatsoever. Usually they're very much solopreneur, maybe a VA or two or something like that, but usually no real thought leadership in the business. So what the PE company would do, or the high net worth individual, they'll come and find someone within our space, vet that person, and then they'll deploy the capital through that person, through an entity. And we have an entity right now that has bought about 15 million from us over the last year. And that's exactly what they did. They raised money from PE to come into, to fund their entity, to go and acquire businesses from us.
So also when you were talking there, like none of the businesses that you're selling really have, you know, a team of staff or anything like that, just basically buying the asset. There might be a VA or two. Are people keeping those VAs on? Do people sell their VAs as part of their business, or do the VAs stay with the guy and he just keeps doing other projects? What is the kind of common thing there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what I usually recommend to a seller is, if they have like a rock star VA that they're like, I'm absolutely not getting rid of this person, or team member, or whoever it is, what I recommend you do is you remove that person from the business, put them in your next business that you're going to start or whatever project. But during that same moment, you're hiring someone to replace her or him, and you're having that VA or whoever that key employee is to train that person up on all those responsibilities. So by the time you do go to sell, it won't help your net profit, because obviously, you know, it's going to be a little bit of expense in training, which will hurt your valuation a little bit. But by giving and transferring that employee, you make the business more attractive. The more you can make the business more attractive, not necessarily more profitable, but more attractive, you'll sell a lot quicker. So that's something I've seen people do. Some people just give away the employee, no problem. Maybe they're, you know, going off doing something else, don't really need this employee or whatever. If it's a super key employee, like a developer, usually you'll have to give that away. Another way you can do that, though, is you can actually offer support to that buyer. A lot of people think that in negotiations is always about price, but you can actually offer support as a negotiation where you help them hire that replacement. So you get to keep that talent if you wanted.
Yeah. And you could give them your processes and everything else that would work well. Now, going back to a beginner potentially starting out in this industry, and maybe, you know, they've got a couple of hundred grand to spend on a website. Do you guys offer any kind of support, training, or anything like that for, you know, just a random guy that's got money and says, right, I'm into this buying and selling shit, but I've no idea about VAs. I've no idea who's good or who's bad in the SEO industry. You know, can you help me? Is that a service you guys also provide?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there is something we're working on that will help people with that. So I think I've talked to you about this. I've been working on this project for so long, but finally it's starting to come to the light of day. We're building an actual course on buying and selling online businesses. And within that course, when someone buys it, there will be a vendor list. And that what that vendor list will be is literally our sellers and buyers telling us who are the service providers that they are using. And so that way you have a real up-to-date list all the time of successful buyers, because they bought the business and, you know, they're still using the service provider or whatever, and successful sellers that use these service providers to get there. So that is something we're looking to do. But typically if someone comes to us and asks us, we'll give them like some, you know, basic advice of where to go and find them. Usually the best person to ask that, if you're the buyer, is ask the seller who would they use, because the seller is probably going to know, right? We're all nerds in the thing that we do. So we usually know who are the influencers in our space. So if you're the buyer, you're brand new, I would definitely ask the seller, what blogs do you read? What conferences do you go to? Who do you like in the SEO space? What are the main things I should look to outsource if you are in my position buying this business? You know, questions like that force the seller to think on your behalf to solve your problem. And of course, they want you to buy the business, so they're probably going to give you an actual answer, right? So they're going to give you that time of day.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you guys are potentially doing, you know, obviously giving basic advice there, but I think long-term, a course would be something that you guys probably have a wealth of knowledge, experience and stuff that you're potentially not tapping into. So it sounds like a good thing if you can ever get the time to get round to doing it. I know.
Oh, man, dude. Last month, I literally spent about a week and a half just building PowerPoints for it. I'm so sick of Google Slides.
Slides, videos, they're all a pain in the ass. I mean, I don't mind doing videos like this, but they're fairly easy, fun, don't require a lot of editing. But when it's courses and shit, it's a different ball game and tedious. But fingers crossed that you do eventually, as I say, get that out there. So what is the future for Empire Flippers? Is it just continuing to grow and scale, get more quality websites on there, or is there other plans to do anything cool going forward in the future?
Yeah, we have a lot of plans. Not all of them that I can necessarily talk about just yet. Got to keep a little bit of my competitive edge. But one thing I always tell my team specifically, and whenever I'm speaking at the company, you know, is a lot of people, they focus on competitors, right? They're like, oh, you know, they're doing this, or we got to do that, or whatever. Like, I've never been a big fan of that. I don't like looking at what the competition is doing. I want to look what is ahead. So all that stuff you just said, yes, that's true. But of course, I want more quality businesses. I want all this stuff. But what my goal is at Empire Flippers, the long-term goal. So this is one part of my five-year plan, about a year into it, is to look at who our real competitors are for what we really sell, which is investment opportunity, right? Really the emotional opportunity to like change your life. Now we might change your life in a very negative way if you buy this business that just like completely goes to shit, right? Like, sorry, yeah. that's the risk. Like I told my copywriter that when we sell this course, one of the gold lines is going to be me in a video saying like, I'm going to teach you a way where you can possibly lose hundreds of thousands of dollars, just being honest, like that could happen. But what I'm really trying to do is enter that space where people are talking about buying real estate, investing in stock markets. Like to me, that's my real competitor. So I want to enter the conversation about adding digital assets as part of that mix of, financial independence, good investing, obviously it's on the aggressive, more riskier side, but it's very hard for you to double your net double your investment in less than a year in real estate, especially in stocks. But yeah. If you know what you're doing with online business, it's like, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's a lot easier, I would say, than these other factors. And so I want to enter into that space, really compete against people talking about investing in real estate, investing in stocks. Not to like insult them, but just to add to the conversation, right? No, I invest in real estate, so.
I think you've got to look at, putting your eggs not all in one basket, not just going out to buy tons of real estate. I think buying and selling digital assets, as you say, you can double, treble your money very, very quickly, especially if you know what you're doing, or even hiring a guy that knows what they do. So I think there's a massive opportunity going forward there, because although affiliate marketing has been around for a number of years, or a long time, I think it's still in its infancy when it comes to investors and stuff like that. People are now just becoming more aware, or just in my opinion, everywhere I go now, everyone wants to talk to me about affiliate marketing, and I'm like, people are sick of the client side of the work and want to delve into this, and I think that's it's just going to continue to grow over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. For your audience out there that wants to do that, starting an affiliate site with just like the mindset, like I want to replace my job income, or buying one to replace your job income, all really good. But if you want to think bigger, view that content site in the same way as you might view a magazine, view it as a media company. And you like that's what opens you up to do like $132 million exit instead of a $100,000 exit. Yeah. When you start thinking like that. But yeah, for sure, man. If I ran an SEO agency, the first thing I would do was I got up to 10K a month. It's like, all right, how do I get into affiliate marketing?
that's the dream for most agencies now. I think they're just like, get the client money and shovel it into to affiliate or whatever, buy a SaaS tool or whatever the hell it's going to be. But
yeah.
One thing I do want to ask you before we go, so obviously it's all good and well, people making lots of money, selling websites for $132 million. Has there ever been a situation where a guy's dropped hundreds of thousands of pounds and maybe had a rookie team blown up a website and came back to you guys and saying, you bastards, fucking robbing here? Does that happen regular? Because we do training courses and you give these rookies or whatever, access to a website, and the next day they're on the phone, my fucking website's blown up, it's your fault, your training was shit.
What are you doing? It's all your fault.
So has there been that scenario where you've literally, someone's dropped a shit ton of money and basically fucked the whole thing up for themselves?
Yes, absolutely. That's why I said earlier, I'm going to let you buy this course, where if you follow the course, you might lose hundreds of thousands of dollars, right?
Yeah.
And that we always want to be upfront about that. We try our best, right? For example, one thing we do is if we find out that you only have a certain amount of money, say it was like $150,000, and that's not just investable money. That's like your entire net worth, your emergency fund, and all that kind of stuff. We find that out, we will try to prevent you from buying anything close to that amount. Like we'll try to let's go at 30 or 40K or something like that. We'll try to prevent that. And we can't always, some people still make that mistake because we can't know everything. Right.
Yeah.
In terms of like sites going down. So this is something that's very interesting. It's pretty recent. So I had one of my new content specialists, Brandon, go and interview everyone that's bought a content site from us at least 6 months or longer in the past to understand like what happened. We're building this ROI case study. In fact, I just saw the first draft of it the other day. So he ended up interviewing about 30 people. Out of the 30 people who bought from us, which obviously more than 30 people have bought from us, but that was the amount of people we could get a hold of. Those 30 people, 67% of them either stayed exactly the same in terms of what the income was on the site, or they grew significantly. So some of them grew by triple what they bought it for. Now that 43% or so, they didn't do so well. So, I mean, that's pretty, like, if you look at entrepreneurship in general, that's a huge step up from like the 98% failure rate of most startups, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at it in that light, it's actually quite positive. Now in that 43%, one of the guys, because I told Brandon, like, look, go ahead and give them a VIP code to like do the study for us. Like, we'll give them, you know, the ability to look at 5 businesses without putting down a deposit, something to get them to talk to us, right? And the guy told him, like, you got to get that director of marketing Greg to send me $6,000 for scamming. Well, I wasn't even working at the company when you bought this business, but but yeah, so we do get that, right? And like, it's just going to happen. That's again why I mentioned vetting and due diligence, two very different things, but you can only say it so often. And sometimes people buy businesses they really shouldn't. And we try to tell them that, but we can only do so much if they decide to follow our advice or not. You know, if you have zero coding experience and you buy a $1 million SaaS business from us, and we told you you probably shouldn't, you buy it, like, how do I do Python? Like, we don't know. Like, we, I had no idea, dude. Why did you buy this? We told you not to. So yeah, that does happen.
I suppose I'm quite an impulsive guy, and I'm the type of guy that if I had the money, I would probably come back with some bag of shit that I have no skills to do just because I thought it was a cool thing to buy. So I guess a lot of guys are the same, just crazy impulsive buys and worry about the rest of it later on. But they probably go by the monthly profit that's listed in your website and go, wow, you know, I'll get my money back in 2 years or whatever.
20 months or whatever, yeah.
So, but nah, as I say, it's we want to focus more on the positives. I was just curious to know.
And those 43%, some of them didn't do anything necessarily wrong. When we look at what they actually did, they basically all they did was like look at the backlinks, try to clean up the profile and try to update some of the content. And that was pretty much it. That's all they did. And out of that 43%, it wasn't like everything went to zero. Most of them are still making money. And if you like, we have this one guy, when I first came out with the company, I was in Manila and he was living in Manila at the time. He bought about, I think 10 sites from us. This is back when we were selling much smaller sites, like 10, 20 grand sites. And I asked him, like, oh, you must be a big fan of us. He said, yeah, I love you guys. Like, how's your sites doing? Like, they all tanked. Like, what? Like, why are you not like furious at me? And he's like, no, like, you don't understand. Like, I'm not actually an internet marketer or anything like that. I actually invest mainly in real estate and stock. So yeah, they failed in comparison to where they were, but they're way outpacing all my other investments. You know, like if only an internet marketer would ever think like that, you would see like a 10% drop, like what's going on? You know, like, what's happening? But that investor guy, he's like, this is awesome. I haven't done anything and it's outpacing everything else. So it comes down to your perspective. So
interesting, but sadly we are out of time. So but I'm sure we could probably talk for hours on everything.
always Craig.
But for anyone who's looking to get onto Empire Flippers, it is empireflippers.com. And you can also find Gregory kicking about on Facebook and various other social media channels. But thank you, as I say, for coming on, and no doubt we will catch up somewhere soon.
Yeah, I hope so, man. Thank you so much for having me on, and hopefully your audience got some value out of this. So if they want to reach out to me personally, feel free to shoot me an email, greg@empireflippers.com. I'm usually pretty easy to get a hold of. So,
cool. Perfect. Catch up with you later on.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.